Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. In-play radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Hello everyone, good to have you with us here as we get set for the divisional playoffs in the National Football League. It's Dave Kellner here in the studio and as ever joined on the line by Beating the Book podcast host Gil Alexander to look forward to this weekend's matches, four of them in total. Starting on Saturday night at 9:35 p.m. UK time with the Ravens at the Patriots and finishing with the Colts at the Broncos on Sunday evening at 9:40 p.m. here in the UK. Now it's time for me to welcome Gil Alexander onto the line. Good morning, Gil.
Good morning, David. Does not get any better than this. You know, after this weekend, it's just the two championship games, obviously, and then it's the Super Bowl after that. So this is really our last just fun-filled weekend of football.
Absolutely, Gil. And we'll reflect a little bit on the wild card action that we saw last weekend as we go through the podcast. But let's get stuck in here and we'll start off with the Baltimore Ravens at the New England Patriots. The Ravens are 5-2, the Patriots 1-3. The spread, Ravens plus 7 with extra juice at 5-6. And the Patriots minus 7 at even money. Gil, last weekend, the Baltimore Ravens came through their wild card clash against the Pittsburgh Steelers really in flying colours. Joe Flacco threw for a couple of touchdowns. Let's have a little bit of reflection on that win, first of all. The difference in the two sides, the Ravens and the Steelers, appeared to be the pass rush in the main. They got pressure on Roethlisberger, whereas the Steelers couldn't get to Joe Flacco.
Yeah, you know, that was the one game that I got right last week. I believe I was 1-2. We got Baltimore easily, and we failed on Arizona, which had about 175 chances to cover and couldn't. and then I was just flat out wrong about the other one on Sunday, which was the Cowboys that just, you know, they won, but they didn't cover against the Lions and didn't deserve to cover. But the key with Baltimore was sort of what we focused on, which I think was the fact that Pittsburgh's defense, through all the great fireworks of Ben Roethlisberger's offense, Pittsburgh's defense had been terrible all year. And without Le'Veon Bell, I actually got into an argument with a stats-heavy guy last week who I really respect, who was just saying, you know, running backs in the NFL really don't mean anything. Well, yeah, but Le'Veon Bell matters. You know, you can't make a blanket statement over all these guys. So, yes, it's all of the above, including what you said, which is Baltimore's pass rush is there. Haloti Ngata being back in that lineup is massive. And along with Terrell Suggs on the outside, they anchor an amazing Baltimore Ravens defensive line. And quite frankly, not only are they going to give, you know, not only would they give Ben Roethlisberger trouble, but they'll give any quarterback in the NFL trouble, including Tom Brady this week. It's a real concern for the Patriots for sure.
This is an intriguing matchup, Gil, this one, because these two teams have a rich history, don't they, in terms of playoff football recently as well.
Yeah, it's the biggest narrative you'll hear about this game, and rightfully so. You know, Tom Brady, for all his greatness, 18 playoff wins. It's the most in NFL history, 18 wins in the postseason. But he's 1-2 in his postseason career at home against the Ravens. And 11-1 against everyone else, by the way, at home. But 1-2 in his postseason career at home against the Ravens. So that says a couple things. One, Joe Flacco and the Ravens are consistently built to win in the playoffs. And, of course, a couple years ago on this podcast, I had them in the Super Bowl over the Niners, and we were right about that. But it also says about the Ravens that they're also not good enough to be at home in the playoffs, and that the Patriots oftentimes are. So you have a point spread in this game at 7, which is, I think, where it ought to be. And I lean Ravens here, but it's not my strongest pick of the week. I love getting 7, and for me it's all about the Ravens having a three-pronged approach. We talked about their defensive line, that pass rush, just second to none. Haloti Ngata means a lot. You think quarterbacks run this league, they do. But there are a few defenders, J.J. Watt being atop that list, of course, with Houston, that really impact the football game. Haloti Ngata is right up there. And so I think the Ravens defensive front is huge. I think their running game with Justin Forsett. Justin Forsett is this guy who backed up Marshawn Lynch in Seattle. Then he backed up Arian Foster in Houston for years. He gets his shot this year because of the Ray Rice scandal in Baltimore. And the Ravens are setting records with Justin Forsett in terms of yards per carry. Their running game is huge. And then there's the Flacco factor. Joe Flacco is a NFL playoff quarterback of historical proportions at this point. He's got the most road playoff wins by any quarterback since the 1970 merger of the old AFL and the NFL. 13 touchdown passes with zero picks during his current five-game playoff win streak, and he has thrown 17 touchdowns against one interception while winning six of his last seven postseason games. And the Ravens are historically a team that does well. John Harbaugh, 7-4 in the postseason. That's tied with Tom Coughlin and Tom Landry for the most road postseason wins in league history. We can go on and on and on about how the Ravens are good in the playoffs. The flip side, Dave, as I ramble now about this game because it's all pouring into my head, but the flip side, if you're a Patriots guy, and I'm the first to admit, even as I lean Ravens, and here's why it's not my strongest pick of the week, even though I lean Ravens, is that the Patriots have these great corners in Darrell Revis and Brandon Browner who can really make your offense one-dimensional. They can take Flacco's deep ball out of the game. And then there's Rob Gronkowski. And this is the real thing that always scares you when you play against the Patriots. The fact of the matter is that Rob Gronkowski means everything to Tom Brady. Mike Sando from ESPN, who I had on my podcast this week, didn't mention this stat on my show, but I'll pass along something he had in one of his videos to you, which is, first four games of the season, Patriots went 2-2. Gronkowski averaged 30 snaps a game. Since then, the next 11 times he's on the field, 60 snaps, 60-ish snaps per game. The Patriots go 10-1. It's really that simple sometimes. But again, there's a 7-point spread involved. That's straight up 10-1. And again, if you put a gun to my head, I'll take the 7.
Yeah, and the Patriots only 3-10 against the spread in their last 13 playoff games, which is a little bit of a negative if you're thinking about backing the Patriots this weekend. You mentioned Gronkowski, and he is heavily influential as far as the Patriots are concerned, not just because of his skills catching, Gil, but the attention that the secondary have to focus on Gronkowski. That allows Julian Edelman, Shane Vereen, Brandon LaFell all to find space, but those three guys aren't exactly A-graded receivers. They are not elite in that position.
They're not, but the Ravens' real Achilles heel is that secondary. So, you know, that's the one weakness of the Ravens team that if, again, there's a lot of attention on Gronkowski, which there will be, just makes them that much more vulnerable. And you're right about, you know, that attention given to the tight end. Just hearkening back to the San Francisco 49ers, Colin Kaepernick, terrible season this year, as we know, with his accuracy and the 49ers. Last year, great accuracy when Vernon Davis, his tight end, was very effective. When Vernon Davis was in the lineup, Kaepernick was amazing in 2013. When he wasn't, when he was hurt, Kaepernick was very ordinary. Well, this year, Vernon Davis just sort of took himself out of the lineup. I don't know what was going on with Vernon Davis, but he had a really down year in San Francisco, and Kaepernick was terrible all year long. Kaepernick is no Brady, but Gronk has that effect these days with an aging Tom Brady. So that's the key for the game. You know, can the Ravens somehow limit that effect? If they can, they can not only cover, they're a team, again, built on a good quarterback, a good running game, and a good defensive front that could actually win a playoff game and, of course, have, as we've documented. You can go a long way, Dave, in any football season with those three elements.
The Ravens 5-2, the Patriots 1-3, the spread there +7, the Ravens 5-6, -7. The Patriots even money, and the total points 47.5, 10-11 the under, 10-11 the over. The late game on Saturday, early Sunday morning UK time, is the Carolina Panthers at the Seattle Seahawks. The Panthers 15-4, the Seahawks 2-11, and this spread is 10.5 currently. The Panthers +10.5 at 10-11, the Seahawks -10.5 at 10-11. First of all, Gil, still having nightmares about Arizona's trip to Carolina last weekend. Arizona hosting Carolina last weekend. Ryan Lindley at quarterback, 78 yards of offense, and they still almost covered that spread, Gil. It was a heartbreaking battle, that one.
Painful or painful, whichever word you want to use. I feel like I let listeners down with that. You know, we had, of course, Seattle a couple weeks before that against Arizona as my biggest pick. We got that easily. We had Carolina against the Saints the following week. We won that one easily. And so here was the clash of the two teams we had made some money off of in two consecutive weeks. And I figured, boy, he can't be that bad, right? He can cover this spread. Well, you know what? I was wrong. He was that bad. You know, we had the ball at the 8-yard line, interception. We had the ball even at the end of the 26-yard line. I couldn't believe we still had a shot at the backdoor cover. And Weeks threw another interception. So, at that point, you just shake your head and you're just like, man, that's a failure in handicapping. He was that bad. But what it says is, you know, what you project forward and you say, okay, well, what does that tell us about Carolina? It tells us that Carolina is still Carolina. You know, they're 7-8-1, now 8-8-1 if you take that win against a depleted Cardinals team, at least at quarterback, and a defense in the Cardinals that really couldn't afford to make a single mistake with Ryan Lindley at quarterback, and of course they eventually did. And here they go into Seattle. Now, I started out my show yesterday by saying in divisional round playoffs in the NFL in the last 9 seasons, this weekend coming up, at least one road team has won outright. It's the second longest streak in NFL history in that regard. And so you say, could it be Baltimore? It could. I have a lukewarm nod to Baltimore. I certainly like them against the spread. Could it be the Carolina Panthers, Dave? And the answer is a resounding no way. Not a chance.
This is a defensive battle that I'm looking forward to, Gil, because these two teams come into this in good form as well. Seattle won 6 straight to secure that home field advantage throughout the playoffs, and the Panthers have won 5 straight matches. They have been strong defensively, the Carolina Panthers, recently, Gil. To what do you attribute their recent form?
Well, the main reason is, and we documented this on the show last week, they haven't played anybody. They haven't played any good teams. Now, a couple of those teams had good offenses and really poor defenses, I will admit. But if you're playing a team with terrible defenses, eventually, they break too, and you've got no shot at winning, and the offense is always in a precarious position. So it's not exactly a clean sort of excuse. They just really have not played good teams. And in fact, you know, who did Carolina beat this year? Tampa Bay, Detroit, Chicago, New Orleans, Tampa Bay, Cleveland, Atlanta, and now Arizona with Lindley at quarterback. So besides Detroit, they've beaten absolutely nobody.
And go on, Gil, sorry.
No, I was going to ask you, do you have any club in the Premier League, let's say, where their stadium is feared by opponents to go in there? In other words, the atmosphere is so great that it really has a home field advantage?
Not like CenturyLink Field in Seattle. I suppose the only comparison you could have is when Sir Alex Ferguson was coaching at Old Trafford and coaching Manchester United. Old Trafford was seen as this fortress because they had such dominant performances week in, week out, year in, year out, and they didn't allow teams to come in there and gain points. However, that was just due to the superiority of the team and the personnel rather than the actual atmosphere in there. Stadiums in the Premier League, they're not quite as vociferous as they are in the National Football League, Gil. That atmosphere, not the same, really.
Yeah, and this is what I was getting at with this game. It was January of 2006, I attended a Redskins playoff game at Seattle, and I know your listeners are like, what is it? What fantasy world is he talking about? Yeah, the Redskins actually go to the playoffs. I know. It's crazy, I know. But I actually went, it is everything you hear it to be, it is. Dave, I could not hear the person next to me. Mm. Literally, their mouth was moving. I could not hear them. It is the loudest stadium environment that you will ever witness in your life. And Carolina, who has played Seattle a few times here in recent years, and has played them well. They've lost 3 games by 5 points or fewer each time. But they were all in Carolina. And I don't think Cam Newton and this team have any idea what they're getting into when they get into this atmosphere. Home field is often exaggerated by pundits when talking about the NFL. There is no exaggeration about it at Seattle. And you go in there, their defense has allowed, in that six-game winning streak you're talking about, they've allowed three touchdowns in those six games. Three. 39 total points. And they've kept five of those six opponents, to 7 points or less while winning those six games. Haven't allowed a point in the fourth quarter. Now they're at home. They've got the number one defense in the NFL in opponents' yards per play, number two in both yards per pass attempt allowed, yards per rush attempt allowed. And the big issue on top of that now, all of that in the mix, Carolina doesn't have star Lotulelei. That's their big defensive tackle here. And he's got a broken bone in his foot. The Panthers were ranked last in the NFL in yards per rush allowed between the tackles at over 5 yards per carry this season. Now they don't have Lotulelei. And the Seahawks have Max Unger. Their center is back following a six-game absence. He had knee and ankle injuries. He's in. So you've got Marshawn Lynch behind Max Unger against the defense without star Lotulelei in that atmosphere. You know, I'm not making a play here after all that because it is 10.5. It's more than 10 points, and I don't like the number because that's a lot of points, let's be honest. But there's no way I'm putting my money on the Panthers here. None. And I had two guys on my show who love the Panthers. And then finally my third guest was like, no, Gil, you're the only one who makes sense here. I didn't really say that. But, yeah, no, I'm not putting my money on the Panthers. But it is a lot of points. I just don't see any way the Panthers can compete here long-term against the Seahawks.
And just to pick up the thread, you mentioned home field advantage here for the Seattle Seahawks. I presume experience is key. And their Carolina Panthers and their three real playmakers, Cam Newton, Luke Kuechly, and the rookie wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin, this is their first time playing at CenturyLink Field. That cannot be understated, can it?
It can't be. You know, it can't be. It's one of those things where, yeah, they're veterans. They know about the stadium. They'll practice for it. They'll do all that. Yeah, you don't know about it till you get in there. Believe me. As a fan, you don't know about it till you get in there. You're just like, oh, my God. Like, because I grew up, you know, at RFK Stadium in Washington, D.C. That stadium actually shook. It was an amazing atmosphere and really helped the Redskins win three Super Bowls in the 80s and early 90s. This is a modern-day version of something like that, which is actually, you know, they said it was built to trap noise. Actually, not true, but it does. And the noise just stays in there. It's an amazing atmosphere. The last eight Super Bowl champs, by the way, Dave, the last eight Super Bowl champions have failed to win a single playoff game. That streak ends on Saturday. And I think, you know, early in the year, I loved the 49ers as a great futures pick midway through. When that clearly went by the wayside, I said on your show, well, it's got to be Seattle and New England. And so far, that second prediction is looking pretty good right now. I think New England's teetering against the Ravens, but I see no chinks in the Seattle armor, certainly not this weekend.
Let's move on to the matches on Sunday then, Gil, starting with the Dallas Cowboys at the Green Bay Packers. The Cowboys 11-5, the Packers 5-13. This spread, the Cowboys plus 5.5, 10-11. The Packers minus 5.5, 10-11. Firstly, Gil, how has this line moved throughout the week?
It's moving, and it's more and more money on the Cowboys. You know, this was 7 at one point. It is now, you know, last night it went down. It was 6.5. It was 6. Now it's 5.5. 5.5 in favor of the Packers, and I could not agree more with that move. This is, you know, I said earlier, at least one road team has won in division round in the last 9 years. Well, this is the team I think wins it outright. My biggest pick of the week is on the Cowboys, and I had them at 6.5 earlier in the week, 6 as well. This is the play for me. The Cowboys going into Green Bay, you know, it's the first playoff game between these two teams at Lambeau Field since the famous Ice Bowl. It's a legendary NFL game before any of us were born. Most of us listening to this show as well, I'm sure. In 1967, January of 67, it's actually the 66th title game between the Packers and the Cowboys. It's called the Ice Bowl because the weather conditions were just horrific. I believe, and I have the exact temperature of that game, it was minus 22 Fahrenheit. I don't know what that translates to Celsius. Minus 23 Fahrenheit.
Wow. Wind chill.
It's just bone-chilling cold. This won't be as cold as that. It'll be about 18 degrees Fahrenheit. You can do your Fahrenheit-Celsius conversion off-air. Everybody in their own spare time. But it is a it's going to be cold, and the Cowboys are kind of built for the cold. You know, I was saying to everybody last week, and we could talk about the flag and the picked-up flag from last week, but the fact that the Cowboys got through that game, however they got through it, referee-aided or whatever, the pressure's off that team now. You know, they were 8-8 every single season up until now, the last 3 years. That is, they were 8-8, basically a 500 team since 1997. And then this year, all of a sudden, 12-4, they win the NFC East. Their offense is spectacular. They had a lot of pressure on them last week. If they lose that game, all that anti-Cowboys narrative talk is going to come back in real quick, flooding in. So who cares if they're 12-4? They still can't win a playoff game. Now, Dave, it's all gravy, and I think the pressure's off them. I think they're going to perform very well this Sunday.
What about that flag, Gil? To actually call it on the field and then reverse the decision left me and numerous other viewers across the world flabbergasted, and it left others suggesting that it was evidence of a collusion to provide us with the glitz and glamour of America's team, the Cowboys, going into Lambeau Field to take on the Packers. It was a call like I've never seen in the NFL, Gil.
Yeah, if the flag, you know, here's the thing. And by the way, you guys weren't the only one flabbergasted. Everybody here was flabbergasted. We call it the picked up flag game now. if the flag was never thrown and no call was made, I don't think anybody would really have a problem with it. You know, I don't think anybody would be talking about that play, to be quite honest with you. But the fact that it was thrown and then picked up, that's obviously the issue. Now, listen, I don't think there was – I genuinely don't believe there to be a fix or collusion. I'm not one of those conspiracy theorists. But if you break down that play, a lot of stuff could be called. Defensive holding was not detected. Defensive pass interference, maybe. It's a judgment call. Again, if you don't throw the flag in the first place, maybe you don't call it. The offensive player, Brandon Pettigrew of the Lions, actually sort of touched Anthony Hitchens of the Cowboys' face mask. Maybe you could have called something on the offensive player. Dez Bryant left to the sidelines. That should have been flagged. There's a discretionary call on the referee's part. They can actually throw a flag on Dez Bryant for coming on the field. So there was so much that happened on that play. And yes, in the end, Detroit probably did get hosed because 9 times out of 10, that flag gets thrown, doesn't get picked up. And for it to happen in such a key moment in an NFL playoff game, the fact that it got picked up really lowered the Lions' win probability by the numbers. But here's the thing, Dave. The Lions deserve blame after that. They should have gone for it on 4th and 1.
Yeah.
All the math tells you to go for it. They decided to try to draw Cowboys offside, couldn't do it. And then they shanked the punt. And then subsequent to that, the NFL does admit that they missed a holding call on the 4th and 6 for the Cowboys, and so the real errors occurred, and the admitted errors by the NFL occurred after that play. So, yeah, does that happen for my team? Hell no. It only happens to the Cowboys and the Patriots. It only happens for franchises like that. At least that's what those of us who root for downtrodden teams believe. But, yes, Cowboys magic, Cowboys fix, whatever you want to call it, here they are.
Do you think DeMarco Murray's running with the same sort of force as he was earlier on in the season?
You know, I think the hand is bothering him. I do think there's something there. I think everybody's banged up. I mean, look, we're going to talk about Peyton Manning in a bit. We're going to talk about Aaron Rodgers in a bit. We know that something's going on with both of those guys. Aaron Rodgers, obviously, it's out in the open that something's going on with him. Some people think Cam Newton, the previous game we just talked about, some people think something's up with him. And then some people think something's going on with Tom Brady. Everybody has a theory. There's definitely something with DeMarco Murray's hand still, I think, at this point. We know it got banged up a few weeks ago, and they had the surgery. I will say this, though. You know what he hasn't done, even with that hand? He hasn't fumbled, which is big news for DeMarco Murray. His one real problem earlier this year was that he fumbled. Hasn't fumbled the last 9 games. Now, I think he got a little shaky at one point this past week where the ball bobbled out of his hand. But so far he's held on to it, and that more than anything is the key to any NFL game. In fact, with the Cowboys, they're 2-4 this season when losing the turnover battle, 11-0 when tying or winning the turnover battle, and the Packers themselves are tied for the fewest giveaways with 13 and led in turnover margin, plus 14 this season. So that's big. If DeMarco's Murray hand is giving him trouble, something to think about for sure.
You mentioned fleetingly there Aaron Rodgers as well. He is having problems with the calf at the moment, and that affects his mobility and affects this Green Bay Packers offense as well, because when he connects with Jordy Nelson, a lot of their connections come when Aaron Rodgers can scramble out of the pocket and deliver that deep ball. That's a threat that's going to be negated on Sunday night.
Yeah, it's a strained calf, and then we found out yesterday there's a slight tear in that calf. And it should be noted, and I mentioned this on my show too, you know, when he went down with the calf injury against the Lions in Week 17, he did come back, right? He played in that game. He played the rest of the way. He was obviously hobbled. But, you know, in the interest of all the information, he was 11 for 13 after that with a touchdown pass. He also scored on a one-yard quarterback sneak. But his mobility was definitely limited. And here's the thing. We think of Rodgers as this pocket quarterback. We don't think of him in the same way we think of Russell Wilson, who seems to be running all over the field at all times. But Rodgers' mobility is key. He really is a mobile quarterback. That's part, you know, of his game. That's an added dimension for him. 38 touchdown passes, zero picks in his last 16 starts at Lambeau. That's like video game numbers right there. That's unbelievable. He hasn't thrown a pick since week 12 of the 2012 season. It's over 2 years, including the playoffs. 477 straight passes without an interception at Lambeau. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. But even if he was full strength, I would like the Cowboys getting all the points here, even if Rodgers was full strength, because I just think the Cowboys are a team built for this cold. Romo's, by the numbers, number one in the NFL as a quarterback this year, as we've talked about previous weeks. He's been fabulous. DeMarco, as long as he can hold on to the ball behind that amazing offensive line, you know, we don't talk about offensive lines enough, but this Cowboys offensive line could be one for the ages. They have two rookies, two young players that have just been a difference maker for them and didn't work out for a half last week. Tony Romo was getting big pressure in the first half last week, but whatever adjustments they made at halftime, they protected Tony Romo, and I really do feel like they abandoned the run a little too early last week, even when trailing the Lions. I don't think they'll make that same mistake in the cold weather. I think the Cowboys will go right back to pounding the football with Murray behind that line. And then there's always Dez, and you just have to find Dez a few times, and the fireworks begins. He's such a playmaker, and I don't think that Green Bay defense can stop the Cowboys' offense. Now, keep in mind, the Cowboys' defense, we want to talk about the other side, definitely suspect. They've been disguised in the fact that the Cowboys' offense has stayed on the field so long this year that we haven't had to see the Cowboys' defense exploited that much. We got a glimpse of it in the first half last week. But I don't think a Green Bay Packers offense, even at full strength, will be able to keep up, will be able to match the Cowboys this week. So love the Cowboys against the spread, getting the points. And I actually think the Cowboys win this game outright.
Wow, that would be something. The Dallas Cowboys to beat the Green Bay Packers in Lambeau Field this weekend then. We finish off with the Indianapolis Colts at the Denver Broncos. The Indianapolis Colts are 5-2, the Denver Broncos 1-3. On the spread, the Colts getting 7 points, 20-23. The Broncos minus the 7 points at 20-21. And as always, Gil, this is being billed as Andrew Luck against Peyton Manning, even though they are never on the field at the same time. And this does look like a matchup where the quarterback play is going to be crucial. In the other three matches we've previewed, you can see defensive work being key, maybe not in the Cowboys at the Packers, but definitely the Ravens at the Patriots and the Panthers at the Seahawks. But this one, this should be an offensive battle.
It should be. I mean, this should be a lot of points, you would think here. And this is the game that I think the reaction to it has been the most interesting for me. In other words, I like, you know, I lean Ravens underdog. I love the Cowboys underdog. I'm with the Seahawks in the other game, but it's too many points to give for me. This is the one where I was staunchly Denver minus 7. I love the Broncos here in this game. I've been surprised, though, at how down the middle bettors, in my observation, unscientific observation, the folks that I've talked to this week, feel about this game. I thought it would be a lot more Denver, but it's really down the middle. And the people who are backing Indianapolis here really have one common theme, and that is none of them believe Peyton Manning is right.
Yeah.
They think that something is wrong with him. And I think it's an interesting theory, even as a guy who likes Denver here giving the points, because we've talked about how Denver in the last five, 6 weeks of the season, 6 weeks, really became a running team. And C.J. Anderson actually led the NFL in rushing these last 6 weeks, 648 yards on the ground, 8 touchdowns over that span. And the Broncos, a team that are 12-0 this year when they compile at least 88 yards on the ground. So that you would think, oh, wow, so they went to a running game, must have been by design. Well, the folks who back Indianapolis here, they say, no, it wasn't by design. This whole thing about Denver, you know, resting an aging Peyton Manning for the playoffs, it's all nonsense. The truth is that something's wrong with Peyton Manning and that they were forced to do this. Now, the gentleman I had on my show yesterday from ESPN, Mike Sando, who's an ESPN insider and covers the NFL and does so very analytically, he believes the very same thing. He says there's no way they would have transformed to a running game if they knew they could still throw 5 touchdown passes a game. So that's interesting. You know, you head into this game, and even for those of us who are backing Denver, it's certainly something to keep an eye on. We all saw Denver look terrible, and Peyton Manning specifically looked terrible in that primetime game against the Bengals, who don't beat anybody in primetime. And the ball was fluttering. I think Manning threw 4 or 5 picks that night. So that's something to watch here. And if you believe that Peyton Manning is diminished, then I can understand a play on the Colts. I still, whether he's diminished or not, Dave, I'll take my chances. He's getting Julius Thomas back. That's key. We talked about how big a difference tight ends make. I like Denver here.
If you're looking at the numbers with regards to Peyton Manning as well, his completion percentage did drop significantly towards the end of the season, particularly in the red zone as well, Gil. That's where he really struggled towards. In weeks 13 through 17, that's where his play became a little bit diminished.
That's absolutely right. In other words, the Broncos, like, you know, we didn't mention for Dallas and Green Bay, Dallas is 8-0 on the road this year. Green Bay is 8-0 at home. Denver, 8-0 at home as well, and Manning posted a quarterback rating of 117.5 at home versus 89 on the road. So he's been this great home quarterback. But yes, in the red zone, the last 5 weeks of the season, 30th in red zone completion percentage. There's only 32 teams, my friend. 30th. Peyton Manning. What in the world?
Yep.
39%. 22nd in the red zone in total QBR with 18. That's out of 32 qualified quarterbacks once again. Contrast the fact that he ranked first, as Peyton Manning often does, in both completion percentage and total QBR in the red zone in the season's first 12 weeks. And in the last 4 games, his quarterback rating was just 76.8. Now, this is overall, not just red zone, 76.8 with 3 touchdowns and 6 interceptions while averaging just 247.5 yards a game. So, you know, that certainly raises an eyebrow. Again, Julius Thomas diminished. The team was banged up a bit, but typically when we have this great running game, as the Broncos did with C.J. Anderson, you know, when we talk about other teams with great running games, we always follow it quickly up with, that opens up play action, that opens up a passing game. We're saying the opposite here with Peyton Manning. Mm-hmm. We're saying even with that great running game, he didn't perform well. So there's definitely something there. My only thing is that the Colts aren't the team to exploit that. You know, Andrew Luck, for all his brilliance, it's almost a one-man band. I don't want to take anything away from T.Y. Hilton, his brilliant receiver. But Andrew Luck is doing all of this without a running game at all. The Colts don't even act like they're going to run the ball. They're not even trying to fool you. They're just saying, look, we have no running game. We understand you have no – you know that we have no running game. We're just going to pass. And the Broncos' defense is really, really good. You know, that's the thing. We always focus on Peyton Manning, and justifiably so. But the Broncos' defense is number 2 in opponent yards per play, just behind the Seahawks. They're number 1 against the pass in opponent yards per pass attempt, giving up just 5.6 per dropback. So against Andrew Luck in a one-dimensional offense, that's a pretty good matchup for the Broncos, and pretty good's an understatement. So I've said with the Colts all year this year, eventually that one dimension is going to haunt them, and I think this is finally the week.
What about Daniel Heron? Is he a player with potential?
Yeah, I mean, I guess he's the best they've got. He's the running back right now for the Colts, the running back du jour, if you will, because Ahmad Bradshaw has been hurt, and Trent Richardson has never really lived up to the potential that we thought he had.
He's playing on special teams now, isn't he, Gil?
Yeah, boy. This is a guy who was one of the top five picks in the NFL draft day. I mean, this is a guy they spent tons of money on in Cleveland and then traded him 1 year later to the Colts, which doesn't happen in the NFL. And by the way, when that happened, my comment was, well, the Trent Richardson trade signifies one thing. No NFL team in the near future will ever draft a running back in the top five picks unless it's an Adrian Peterson type or a Bo Jackson, unless it's the elite of the elite.
Yep.
There's no way anybody's drafting a running back top five anymore. And Trent Richardson, I think that's his legacy, really. But about Heron, Boom Heron, as they like to call him, nice little player. He's got one big problem. He's got a big case of fumbleitis. He will drop the ball. And when you got a player who is loose with the football and will turn the ball over, as much as you like him, you're a little scared about him, too. So when the Colts are game planning, they got to incorporate Heron, but they're worried about the fumbles, too. They would tell you that if they had some truth serum.
Yeah, and that's probably why we haven't seen him much up until now, Gil.
Yeah. It's an intriguing matchup, though, for sure. I mean, it's one of these games where I was like, oh, Denver, because I think Peyton Manning will. Yeah, that's the thing with Peyton Manning. We talk about all this stuff. Look, Peyton Manning, we talked about all these great things about Tom Brady and Joe Flacco in the postseason. Let's be honest about Peyton Manning. He's the greatest regular season team performer in the history of American sports. That's damning him with praise. Because when it comes to the playoffs, it has not been fun for Peyton Manning. He's won one Super Bowl, but he overtook Brett Favre for the most losses by a quarterback in postseason history with 12. He's already got that record. And he's been one and done, meaning he's lost the first playoff game of individual postseasons 8 different times, by far the most of any quarterback in the Super Bowl era. 8 different times Peyton Manning has taken the field in the playoffs for the first time and been eliminated. Will this be number 9? I don't think so. But again, that's the sort of narrative hovering over this.
Okay, Gil, let's recap the picks for this weekend, then, starting with the Ravens at the Patriots.
I'm going Ravens here. I do it with a gulp, you know, swallowing hard, but I'm going Ravens here, getting the points.
Panthers at Seahawks. That was a no play, wasn't it? But leaning Seahawks.
Yeah, I'll stay away, but no way I'm putting money on the Panthers.
And we're taking Cowboys. The Cowboys on the money line as well as the spread, Gil.
Yes, against the spread and money line on the Cowboys.
And finishing with the Colts at the Broncos, leaning Broncos, but maybe not as confidently as you were earlier on in the week.
Yeah, no, I'm still going Broncos. You know, I'm aware of what people are saying, and I think it's all valid, but I'm going to go Broncos here. I think a high-scoring affair. You know, we talk about how the Broncos always have these volatile games where if they win by a lot. I like the Broncos here.
Superb. Thank you, Gil. I'm looking forward to the divisional playoffs immensely, and we'll speak about the conferences next week, and just a few weeks left in the NFL.
Dave, I look forward to it. Let's have fun this weekend. Try to sweep it.
Superb. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dave. Always a pleasure.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.